Thank you, Jonathan. Well, I want to welcome each one to this part of the service, and I am really excited to share this morning, and I hope, trust, and pray that what's shared this morning will at least, we can take at least something from the message that will impact you and keep you going on the journey. I was definitely challenged with it. In the 1970s, a furniture maker named Harold Lamonting created a replica of a rare 17th century chair. It wasn't intended to be a scam initially. He was just testing his skills. However, the chair eventually made its way into the hands of a dealer and was sold to the well-known Henry Ford Museum for $9,000. For 2 years, the museum displayed the chair, showcasing it as a genuine piece of American history from the 1600s. Visitors from all over the world admired the antique piece of art and history. The facade broke when an appraiser studying the chair more closely with x-rays found that modern tools had been used in its construction. The discovery was a major embarrassment for the museum, which had trusted the item's origin without thorough verification. How do you know if something is real, authentic, and genuine? Sir Martin Frobisher in the late 1500s was an English privateer, which is basically a pirate with a government contract. Despite being a prisoner in Portugal, plundering French vessels in the name of the crown, making 3 voyages to the New World, and getting knighted for repelling the Spanish warships, the thing we're going to remember him today is a mineral mishap on his second voyage to the New World. There, he discovered an ore that contained what he was certain was gold. Yellow metallic glints and speckles dotted the rocks. He had 200 tons of it loaded on his ship, and to bring back home with him. So Spain's recent success in mining gold and silver in the Americas had other European nations eager to find their fortunes in the New World as well, including France and England. Bringing home gold was a good way for an explorer to secure investments for future voyages. A certain ore usually had gold in it, and back then it was valued at about 5 pounds per ton. And he was sent back to the New World with an even larger fleet to collect more of this gold-flecked American ore. He began digging in Canada, digging several mines, and he came back home with 1,350 tons of it. This time, it was melted down, revealing it for what it really was. A nearly useless stone called hornblende, known for its deceptive resemblance to other more valuable metal-bearing minerals, with the gold flecks being pyrite, or how we know it as fool's gold. How do you know something is real, genuine, and authentic? 1 Peter 1:6-9 says, "In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perisheth, though it be tested with fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen you love, though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, the salvation of your souls. And as I mentioned in the last message, I've been doing a study in 1 Peter. Long ago, I had memorized the whole book, but now I'm doing a little bit more thorough study in it. And last message we covered the first five verses in the first chapter of 1 Peter. And today I'd like to look at 6 through 9. I'd really like to hone in on verse 7. That the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perisheth, though it be tested with fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And that just the genuineness of your faith just really jumped out at me when I read it. You know, genuine, real, true, sincere, something authentic, genuine faith. Is your walk of faith, the Christian life, real? Is it authentic? And is it genuine? Or is it a facade going through the motions, a front or an image? And this morning, I'd like to think about, just genuine faith. What is it? What does it mean? How important is it? And I'd like to talk about it in three different ways. Three different ways is genuine faith is tested, refined, and valuable. Now, this morning, I brought a gold bar here with me. I asked the bank if I could borrow it for a sermon demonstration. They said, yeah, no problem. So, isn't it beautiful? And I see a lot of people grinning there. You don't think it's real? Wouldn't you like to own, you know, just a little piece of this? Or better yet, wouldn't you like to own the whole thing? I mean, look how it glistens. Shines, shiny. I mean, it even says 999.9. I mean, the period's in the wrong spot, but that we can overlook that. It's too beautiful. Now, there's obvious reasons why you might think that this isn't real. But give me a little break. I had to buy a big bar so everyone could see it. I was just hoping the Amazon guy wouldn't see it and run off with it. But seriously, how do you know if something is real? How do you know without a shadow of a doubt that it's real and authentic? Is it just if it looks and feels and looks like the real thing? Is that good enough? And I kept asking myself the question, how do I know something? How do you know something is genuine? And it's simple, actually. To know beyond a shadow of a doubt if something is genuine, it must be tested. It must pass the test, and it must prove that it is genuine. And that leads us to the first point. Genuine faith will be tested. If anyone takes gold, silver, coins, antiques, or anything of value to a shop to be sold, all of those things will be put through a test. It will be verified to make sure that it is of value and that it is authentic and genuine. And, this piece of gold can have the same shape, size, glimmer, shine, stamp. It could even weigh as much as gold. But that doesn't mean it is gold. If I were to test this block of gold, if I were to put heat to it, if I were to refine it, you would find that it would not come out the other side shining like it is now. It would come out the other side a pile of burnt black plastic, and you would find out that it's fake gold. Testing is actually very important. It separates the genuine from the fake, the costly from the cheap, the good from the bad, and the pure from the impure. You know, if things weren't tested, let's take gold for example. If gold were not tested and verified as authentic and genuine, and everything that looks like gold could be valued like real and authentic gold, here's what would happen. It wouldn't simply lift everything that looks like gold to the standards of gold and the value of gold. It would simply devalue the real and authentic gold. And yeah, if in the same way, if you know, if it were possible for us to lift ourselves, to work our way to heaven, or do enough good to cover our bad, it completely takes away and devalues the great work that Christ has done. And when I started thinking about the significance of this verse, that the genuineness of your faith, though it be tested, may be found genuine. Pyrite is fool's gold. It looks real, but ultimately is worthless in value. And I just had to think, you know, are there, quotes, pyrite Christians today? And I made that term up, by the way. It's those that profess to be Christians, those that look like Christians, those that walk and talk and do what Christians are supposed to do. But if you don't have the Spirit of Christ, but if they don't have the Spirit of Christ in them, it's just like pyrite. It's fool's gold and worthless. And we know that's possible according to Matthew 7, verse 21 to 23, which says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty wonders, many mighty works in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" So are you doing the work, or is Christ doing the work in your life? If it's you doing the work, the facade, the image of a Christ follower, doing the right things, saying the right things, walking the right way, if it all stems from your own effort, it's nothing but pyrite, fool's gold. It's fake and not genuine. If all the work is being done on the outside, what people can see, and nothing has changed on the inside, it's nothing like this brick of gold. You know, it mirrors and resembles the real thing, but it's not. It's hollow on the inside, and it won't stand the test. I don't know how many of you read the last ADC newsletter, but on the back of the newsletter, there was a quote by Charles Spurgeon that really stood out to me. And it was probably because I was in the middle of studying for this message. But it says, "Beware, I pray thee, of presuming thou art saved. If thy heart be renewed, if thou shalt hate the things that thou didst once love, and love the things that thou didst once hate, if thou hast really repented, if there be a thorough change of mind in thee, if thou be born again, then hast thou reason to rejoice. But if there be no vital change, no inward godliness, if there be no love to God, no prayer, no work of the Holy Spirit, then thy saying, 'I am saved,' is but thine own assertion. And it may delude, but it will not deliver thee." Delude means to trick, fool, or misleads, believing something that isn't true. And 1 Peter 1:5 says, I skipped ahead there a little bit. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. When trials come, not always, but it may be God testing our faith. And we shouldn't be surprised when our faith is tested or goes through refining fire. Now, I'll quickly say that it's not his desire for us to fail the test. His desire is to strengthen us and to grow us and to draw us to himself. And I had to ask myself the question, do I resist being tested? Most of us, including me, shy away from testing. We don't like being tested. We don't like trials. We don't like the fire. But why should we be surprised when testing does come? In fact, 1 Peter 4:12 says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial," which is at the fiery trial when it comes to test you, "as though some strange thing were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you." In other words, you pass the test. Your faith is genuine. It is real and authentic. Psalms 66:10 says, "For you, O God, have tested us as you have tried us. You have tried us as silver to fire." Job 23:10 says, "But he knows the way that I take. When he has tried me, I shall come out as gold." And James 1:2-4 says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." And that also speaks of passing the genuine test. And I might just mention this about testing. I don't understand why some Christians have more trials or tribulations or persecutions than others. I also don't understand why, it seems like some go through more trials than others. But one thing I do know is that everyone will be tested at the end of time, whether you truly are a child of God, if your faith was genuine. Revelation 20:11-15 says, "Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it. From his presence earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. And books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books, according to what they had done. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." The final test is your name in the book of life. And it's very sobering. No matter what kind of testing or degree of testing you go through in this life, everyone will face judgment and ultimately be tested at the end of time whether your faith was truly genuine or not. And Yeah, what I'm saying this morning is not to scare you or to make you second guess your faith. It's just a simple question to ask yourself, do I call him my father and does he call you his child? Is there an authentic relationship? I'm sure not everyone starts out following Christ with an unshakable bedrock faith. But just as Jesus demonstrated patience with Peter from the first time he called him, through the times that Peter even denied him, he also deals patiently with us. And our fears, pride, and doubts may rise and threaten to wreck our faith, but they'll crumble against the sure foundation of Jesus Christ. And he is our priceless rock. If we trust in him, he will build faith in us more precious than gold. Your assurance in the test is not in your performance, but in Christ's sacrifice and promise. You know, many things in this world, it is up to us whether we pass the test or not. If when I take my driver's license, you know, try to get my driver's license or whatever, trying to pass the grades at school, it is on me, right? But the assurance in the test is not in our performance, but in Christ's sacrifice and promise. The second point this morning is genuine faith is refined. As a Christ follower, your life will be refined. So I don't believe, you know, all things that we go through in life are a test or God testing us. I believe it all can also be used as refining us and to draw us closer to him if we allow it. You know, what is refining? Refining is the process of extraction. It's the process of purification, and it's the process of transformation. Refining is crucial to transforming something, and refining isn't always necessarily easy or a fun process. It takes work, it takes time, it takes heat, and it takes the fire. It's something that happens to things being refined, and it doesn't go through the process of its own accord. The reason so many things go through refining process is to mold and shape things into what we want, what is valuable, and what can be used. If we have genuine faith, our lives will be refined, renewed, and transformed. God wants to do a work in our heart, mind, soul, and body. He wants to refine us and sanctify us. And if we allow it, trials often bring impurities to the surface. He desires to remove the dross of self from our lives. A refining faith is a deeper, closer, genuine relationship with him. The process may not always be easy, but it's worth it. Faith that perseveres through trials of many kinds can't be faked, and it is more precious than gold. Persevering faith is not the removal of the trial, but the removal of the dross and the removal of self. Simply speaking, refining is God at work in our life, sanctifying and molding us into who and what he desires. He desires to mold us into his image, to draw us to himself, to strengthen our faith in him, that we would genuinely trust him. 1 Peter 1:8 says, "Whom having not seen, you love. Though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory." This is sincere trust and genuine faith in him. You know, I was thinking of Abraham, and You know, we know the story. We know the end. Abraham didn't. He was in the middle of it. You know, think how long that journey up the mountain must have been for him. The excruciating weight of God, of what God was asking him to do, then the dread he must have felt as he laid his son on the altar, and the trembling hand as he raised the knife. I can't imagine the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that he was feeling as that was running through his mind as his faith was put to the ultimate test, the ultimate refining process. Abraham's faith wasn't considered genuine simply because he said he believed in God, but because he did exactly what God asked him to do and because he trusted him fully. He put self to the side and trusted what God was doing in his life, even though most likely he didn't understand everything that God was up to. And that was true, genuine faith right there. Listen, age alone doesn't necessarily produce maturity. I've seen way too many old, immature Christians to know that. You can usually tell the difference between those that have faced trials and have had faith tested and refined, their lives tested and refined, and those that have tried everything possible to avoid the refining process. There's something different about those individuals, something that is genuine and sincere, something compelling and attractive, and something valuable. And that leads us to the last portion of the message here. Genuine faith is valuable. That the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes. That's saying genuine faith is precious. It's valuable. Just like gold is valuable when it is refined and tested, when we go through trials, hardships, and persecutions, when we allow God to do his good work in our life and grow and strengthen our faith in him, that is someone God can use. You know, Jesus had sharp criticism and rebuke for the Pharisees. They looked like the real deal. They walked and talked like the real deal. They did all the things. However, they valued the outward public appearance over inner righteousness. They valued earthly perception over heavenly perception. And, you know, just like this gold, beautiful and shining and glistening, but it's still hollow inside. Fleshing out genuine faith is not about yourself. It's not focused on self. It is focused on Christ and others. And I want to leave you with, just a couple marks of valuable, genuine faith. I'm going to just condense this down a little bit from what I had. So genuine faith, the first one is genuine faith is centered on Christ. That is the beginning and the foundation and the starting point. Genuine faith will walk in obedience. If you have genuine faith, you will have spirit-empowered desire to live in a way that honors him. Genuine faith includes love. And when we talk about love, it's not just loving the lovable, but also the unlovable as well. The Pharisees only loved and thought about themselves. Genuine faith will bear fruit. The New Testament points to the fruit of the Spirit as visible evidence of genuine faith. Paul lists qualities such as love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And yeah, these characteristics should grow over time with genuine believers. And lastly, genuine faith will persevere through trials and tribulations. It will stand the testing and refining that may come our way. Our trials, painful as they may be, serve to strengthen and refine our faith. If we allow it, the trials that we experience on this side of eternity can and will result in something more beautiful than we can ever imagine. And that's the praise, honor, and glory of Jesus. I remember a day probably 20 years ago, like it was yesterday. Dad, I was probably around 17 years old or so, and Dad set us, all of us children, down at the table, and he gave us the news that in a couple weeks, we would be permanently moving from Canada to Indiana. And I was devastated. I couldn't believe it. Canada was my home. It was the only thing I knew. I grew up there. Last thing I wanted to do was come to hot, humid Indiana. I was devastated, hurt, and upset at the people that had brought it, that decision about, not, it wasn't Dad and Mom, but yeah. You know, I look back at those times, at that time, and it was a very pivotal point in my life, upper teens. And I know if my parents would have handled it differently, I don't know, you know, I'm sure that probably would have started me on a path that I would have regretted. I probably wouldn't be here today. And I'm not saying that they didn't struggle through that time. I'm sure you've heard James tell the story quite often. It was extremely hard. But because they chose to use that absolutely devastating time to draw them closer to Christ, because they chose love over enmity, because they chose forgiveness over hate, that spoke volumes to me in my journey. And that helped me sort through the hard things and keep me pointed toward Christ. You know, so many people have different stories, different journeys, different trials, different hard things to face in life. And it's so hard to walk through those times. Most times you want to give up and give in. You know, we ask the question, why God? Why me? You know, we want nothing more than to snap our fingers and make it go away. You know, there's one more thing I want to leave you with, and that is, this is a very broken world we live in, and I'm not trying to pretend to know why or that I can give an answer to the hard things you're facing. The advice often given today for people who want to help other people going through hard is to sit with them in it, to empathize with them. Is that the answer? Is simply feeling with someone to understand, share, and experience the hard they are going through enough just to empathize with them? Is that the best answer and solution? Absolutely not. A genuine Christian will care for people in their hard, their trials. But it won't just empathize with them. A simple way we can all flesh out genuine faith is living it and using it. We can walk with each other and gently lead and point each other back to Christ over and over. Reminding each other that prayer is the answer. Jesus is always the answer. Genuine faith produces genuine care and love. You see, a Pharisee only cares about himself. the image and perception of the real thing. If Christ is at work in your life, genuine faith is looking outside of oneself and caring more what Christ thinks, and also in loving your brother well. In closing, I'd like to just break down this message into a couple simple things to remember. Genuine faith is not a facade or an image or a performance. It's a relationship with the Father. If you have genuine faith, you don't need to fear the final test at the end of time. Letting the hard things draw you toward a deeper relationship with Christ is the heart of God. Letting the hard things refine you into who Christ wants you to be, and in turn, we can use those things that we've gone through, that we've learned, to help others in their heart. And that's definitely something that gold cannot buy. Genuine faith is a life that is transformed by the grace and power of God. And it is way more precious than gold, and it will be found to praise, honor, and glory at the end of time. Jake, would you close?